You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. There's been so much news going on, so many things happening in the markets, in geopolitical terms, politically, everything else that John Rubino and I felt we needed to do another show this week to help keep you up to date, which is what we're doing now. But please send us your emails, anything you'd like us to cover or discuss. We're open to it. The email address is kl@carrielutz.com. Well, John, hey, you're shorting Tesla, and some people might call that catching knives.
Well, it's the opposite of catching a falling knife because it's going up. But, you know, I've been trying to short Tesla again. I shorted them a few times in and out back in the day, and it worked because it's such a volatile stock. You know, if you're short, you get a chance to get out with a profit because it has so many corrections. But then as it started to move up, I kept trying to short it. And I'd go in and look at the option premiums, and they were insane because everybody else was shorting it too. So you had to pay so much to short it using options that it wasn't worth it, which means I dodged a couple bullets there because it would have been a brutally bad experience to short Tesla on the way up. But what happened lately is a lot of the shorts got flushed out. You know, this just got so bad that everybody just gave up trying to short Tesla and a lot of the other big tech stocks, which means you could do it more cheaply recently than you could have in the less recent past. So I finally did it and caught it at the recent top. So last Friday, I bought some put options on Tesla, and we'll see. You know, it's the technical and fundamental case for shorting it is phenomenally good, but that it's been that way for quite a while, you know. So you never know if all the Robin Hood money from this next batch of stimulus checks flows into it, it might push it up even further. But you know, right now the PE ratio on that stock is 1700, which means to make the little bit of their earnings that you're buying when you buy their stock worthwhile, the earnings have to soar from here on out. And, you know, there are reasons why that's highly unlikely. And first of all, it's a car company. You know, it's not like they're a software company where if one of the games they sell gets popular, they can just transfer files to the new buyers and make 100% profit on each transfer. If you're a car company, you've got to go, if somebody likes your car and wants to buy it, you've got to go out and get all the raw materials and buy all the components and assemble it and pay the people to do all, you know, and so your margin is by definition pretty narrow no matter what. So they don't make a ton of extra money on every new car they sell, which means it's very hard to justify that kind of a PE ratio. Plus, the whole world is selling electric cars now, which means there's going to be massive competition in a couple of years. You know, Tesla won't be the only cool electric car maker. And third, there's a boom in industrial commodities right now. In other words, raw material prices are going way up, which means all the stuff that goes into a car is getting more expensive, especially what goes into electric batteries, which is going to squeeze margins from the cost side. So I'm pretty comfortable. As scary as shorting Tesla has been for the last few years, this feels like something that is close to the top. And therefore is a potential huge winner with options, you know, because when an option starts going the right direction, you can make 3, 4, 5, 6 times your money in no time, you know? And so this is the kind of thing that could happen with Tesla. So we'll see. But I just wanted to let you know I'd done it again.
Yeah. Well, I understand your reasons for doing it. Look, Benjamin Graham, father of securities analysis in the US and the world for that matter. You know, he's the first one that actually looked at financial statements and said, hey, there's useful information here. He used to say when a stock no longer trades based on its potential, you know, dividend model payout, it becomes speculative. And it doesn't matter how great the company is, the stock itself as an investment becomes a speculation. Effectively, you're gambling, and there's gambling with an edge and there's gambling without an edge. I think all these Robin Hooders here and everybody else who are just gobbling the stuff up, they can't get enough, are probably going to be in for a rude awakening at some point. Just like Bitcoin investors have been raked over the coals numerous times since Bitcoin came around, when stuff trades purely on the basis of emotion without any connection to the actual fundamentals. You know, Tesla doesn't really make that much money. They make a lot of their profit from selling rights to renewable energy credits that they yield because they're the largest EV producer. And without that source, companies like marginally profitable. That's not to say they're not doing great things. We don't believe in Elon Musk, but the fact is corporations, stocks, eventually there's a return to some fundamental means of valuation, fundamental method of valuation. And if that happens to Tesla, they're dead man walking. In the meantime, though, they've been played it so brilliant, John. They've got billions and billions of dollars that they raised from the capital markets without any expectation of ever having to return any of it. I mean, it's been a brilliant run on their part as far as cementing the future of the company goes. And let's not forget, Amazon really never made any money for the better part of a decade. It's questionable how much they really make now. That hasn't affected that stock much lately either, huh?
Yeah. There is first mover advantage, at least in technology. See, the thing is, a car company is not a technology company. They're metal benders. No matter what they include in their car, how many computers and how many touchscreens and things like that, you're still putting together a physical thing and selling it, which limits the upside of your margins. So Benjamin Graham obviously never would have touched Tesla or Bitcoin or Amazon with a 10-foot pole. But, you know, this is a different kind of world because we're flooding it with so much new cash, and that cash has to go somewhere. So some of where it's going is big, interesting, speculative financial instruments. And so that has let us get as far as we've gotten. You know, it has let the bubble blow up to the point that it is. But there's a limit. You know, and we might have one more spike when those $2,000 checks go out and all the Robinhood traders have extra money to play with. You know, that might happen, but we're so far beyond fundamentals right now that if you have a couple of years to run with a short with a lot of these stocks, you're in pretty good shape. Oh, and the other thing that's happening, actually two things. One, we got to get back to Bitcoin in a sec. Don't let me forget, but interest rates are going up. And that is a very big deal for the stock market. And there are technical levels that people in the stock market and the fixed income market look at where they equate stock valuations with interest rates on, say, the 10-year treasury bond. And we're getting to decision points on those indicators. In other words, we're getting to the point where interest rates become an issue for the stock market and a negative issue. In other words, rates get high enough that it spooks stock investors, and that causes a bear market or some other kind of really hard stock market stretch. So we're getting there. And another big round of stimulus could have that impact on long-term interest rates. In other words, it could cause people to start looking ahead to inflation and treating bonds accordingly by selling them and pushing up interest rates. So if that happens, that could bleed over into the stock market. And, you know, these big tech stocks have air pockets underneath them. If we have another stock market crash like we had in early 2020, then, you know, you could easily see 30, 40, 50% drops in a lot of these big speculative favorite stocks. Now, getting back to Bitcoin. All of a sudden, governments are starting to try to regulate them. Did you see what Christine Lagarde said? She's the head of the ECB. And she said it's time for global regulation of, and then I forget what the word she used for it. She called it despicable Bitcoin or something like that. You know, some really pejorative term. So it sounds like Bitcoin has finally come to the attention of the big central banks and the world's central governments as a threat. And they're trying to figure out what to do about it. And one of the things they're looking at is increased regulation. So this is going to be interesting to see what Bitcoin at $40,000 does if the ECB starts organizing global regulation of cryptos. I don't have a good answer for what it does, but I would think that volatility would be part of the reaction. So we'll see. But that's another big part of the Bitcoin story and of the crypto story in general, which has been very interesting for the last year. And it's likely to get even more interesting going forward.
Well, John, we always have said, you and I, that the greatest power that every government has out there is a sovereign power of coining money. Now, in the EU, they've all kind of backed off and given it to a European Central Bank. But every other country in the world that isn't on somebody else's monetary standard, it prints their own money. So that's just competition that I've never seen central banks, when they fully grasped what they were in for, allowing that to continue. And there's many, many ways they can stop it. I've always used the term, like with Rick Rule, said, what are you going to do, Rick, when they arrest you and they break into your office and arrest you for possession of Bitcoin with intent to distribute? And he's like, hey, man, I'm like, they're going to outlaw it and I'm probably not going to use it anymore. But that's just one thing. Technologically, there was that article the other day, the guy, a couple hundred million bucks worth of Bitcoin, and he can't get into his wallet. That could ruin your day, you know?
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Today's show is brought to you by GR Silver Mining, ticker symbol TSX, GRSL, OTC, GRSLF, and their website at grsilvermining.com. The company is extremely well capitalized, currently has a resource of 40 million ounces of silver, and is looking to triple that number in just the next year alone. Its management team is first rate, headed up by Marcio Fonseca, a geologist with vast experience in mining operations and the financial sector as well. With all this going for it, and with silver trading over $25 the ounce, there's no telling how high GR Silver Mining will go. So go to grsilvermining.com to stay up to date on the latest developments and get on their notification list today.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Can you imagine what that guy's going through? So the a little bit of background for that story, because the background is as interesting as the story itself. You know, he's a tech executive who bought some Bitcoin way back in the day, and now it's worth about $270 million? It's something like that. Some insanely large number.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. So and he's got it on a hard drive, which is what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to leave it in a wallet online. But the hard drive has a password, of course. And he lost the paper to it. And that hard drive is configured so that it'll give you 10 tries to get in. And if you're wrong every time, each of those 10 times, it encrypts the data on that hard drive permanently. So you can never get it. So basically it destroys the data. And he's done 8 attempts.
Oh my God.
So far. So he's got 2 more. And he's just guessing. He's using his commonly used passwords to see if any of them work. But he's got 2 more. So yeah, he said he stays up at night thinking, which, God, can you imagine? 2 more passwords that are guesses, and $280 million is at stake, you know? So that's a pretty dramatic story. You know, that's a Netflix-level movie, I think.
I think it will be a big hit for sure. And I'm happy I'm not him. I would have been liked to made the $230 million. But the moral of the story is, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right?
Well, save your passwords big time when you do something like this. Because, see, it's the same thing with gold. You bury it in a place, don't tell anybody about it, and it dies with you. You know, so it happens with all safe haven assets. You know, with financial assets, you've got them in a brokerage account or something like that. There's a record. But with the stuff you're trying to keep out of the financial system, you have this where you store it issue that you've got to deal with. And with cryptos, it's, do you print out the code and put it in the vault and hope the vault doesn't get broken into and the house doesn't burn down, to put it on a hard drive and hope you don't forget the password. You know, there are all these things you've got to deal with, and failing to deal with them adequately means you can potentially lose everything. So, you know, this is the stuff we have to think about on the hard asset side of the ledger. And they're really important issues, you know? So where, for instance, I posted something a while back with the title, "Don't Let Your Thermostat See Where You Put Your Silver Coins." Because now these new thermostats have microphones and cameras, right? So they see what you do in your house if you don't make sure to change the settings to prevent them from doing that. But they come factory installed with that stuff and with the capability of spying on you. So don't hide your gold coins where your thermostat can see you, you know, and it's
same
it's with Bitcoin. Yeah.
Same if you have an internet enabled refrigerator, you know, one of the Samsungs.
Yeah.
They'll be spying on you. And the next thing you know, I always said it'll be going to court and, you know, testifying against you for all of your grievous misdeeds that you've committed. And, I'm only half joking about it, you know?
Well, that record exists somewhere. Yeah, everything that you say around your little smart microphone, you know, that you're using to buy stuff online and everything, they keep track of it all. And the thermostat, well, Google bought Nest, which was a maker of smart thermostats, or Facebook did. One of those two did. And they immediately beefed up the surveillance capability. And now it, you know, the reason for that is so that it can adjust your temperature based on your activity and where you are in the house and what you're doing and stuff. But yeah, that means it's keeping track of what you're doing and where you are. And that data exists now. So it could easily be part of some kind of a criminal investigation in the future. So anyhow, there's a big backlash coming against this stuff where we finally feel like we need to learn about the privacy settings on all the online stuff that we've got.
All that stuff that you just say, okay, right? Okay, we trust you. Don't worry about it.
You know, and because what you're agreeing to in a lot of cases is stuff you would never agree to if you saw it laid out in plain English, right? But you don't want to read 5,000 words of legalese. So you just go, all right, whatever. Everybody else is saying yes, so I probably will too. Yeah. But as we, you know,
and if
get
you
a little bit more concerned with this, yeah.
If you say no to whatever it is they're saying there, then it's like, okay, go find something else. You know, go find QuickBooks online somewhere else if you don't want to play our game.
Yeah.
Box licensing.
Well, so that creates a whole new ecosystem of online services that don't spy on you. For instance, I have a ProtonMail account now, which claims to, you know, encrypt your emails so they can't be looked at. And there are messaging, you know, there are texting services that encrypt your texts. And so there are things you can do to be more or less invisible online. And that's going to become a huge market going forward. Now, and meanwhile, we've got social media platforms that don't censor you anymore. And that's a big bone of contention right now where, you know, the big social media companies just destroyed Parler, which was kind of a free speech based version of Facebook. And, you know, yes, they let a lot of really crazy stuff appear on their platform. But they didn't censor anybody. So you had this kind of you know, two sides of the same coin thing going on, but they've basically just been wiped out. And Gab, I tried to get into the other day, and you just can't get in anymore. Either it's swamped with new subscribers or it's being blocked in some way. But there's an ecosystem out there that is going to be very profitable. Like, people are going to figure out how to do this right. How you keep murderous psychopaths off your network, but you don't censor regular people who are debating vaccines or masks or things like that. And yeah, they're going to be huge. And so, you know, as you mentioned before we went live, Twitter and Facebook are seeing their market caps plunge right now. Now that they, you know, they kicked the president off their networks and they're censoring all kinds of other people, and people are leaving, you know, so you got this kind of conservative flight now out of mainstream social media and into these alt social media platforms that maybe, you know, if the big guys had done it right, there would have not been any oxygen for these little guys to grow up. But now all of a sudden they're in growth markets. So we're going to see a really interesting shift, you know, as Wall Streeters start moving to Florida and Twitter subscribers start moving to Gab or someplace, this is going to be one of the big stories of the coming year.
And that's that point. All right. I live in Florida and I lived all my life in New York and spent most of my time with financial people. You know, those were my neighbors, friends. That's where I lived. And the thought that Wall Street could move to Miami, all right, I still can't get my arms around it. And I live here and I totally get the economics probably as well as anyone else out there. But the idea that you would move out of New York, the financial capital of the world, to a backwater of Florida, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's just not a serious place. Okay. Yes, there's a lot of wealth here. There's a lot of money, but it's a lot like California. I mean, if you told me Texas, that it would be in Houston or Dallas, I could accept that more. But Florida, yeah, like I know the weather and all that, but I guess, you know what it all comes down to, John, is it doesn't matter where you work anymore. Location specific franchises have really diminished. And you see New York in my backdrop here, but it's in the rearview mirror. We're moving forward. And all of these declining urban areas are moving backward and devolving into I don't know what. It's just shocking. So I think it's a trend that's inexorable. It's written in stone. It's going to continue. But the idea that it actually is happening before our very eyes. They always said New York is overly dependent on Wall Street. If anything happens to Wall Street, New York is really in trouble. And in New York, you know, Wall Street's been keeping it afloat for decades. But now it looks like the party's coming to an end.
Well, yeah, you know, big cities have always been hard places to live, but you put up with it for the amazingly good things they had to offer, right? I mean, you know, world-class restaurants within walking distance and super smart people at every party you go to. You know, you meet somebody who is doing some amazing thing on Broadway or Wall Street or someplace. And that's really exciting. And it's, you know, it's worth putting up with some trouble in order to be there. But lately, what you have to put up with is immensely scarier than what you used to have to put up with, right? If pandemics are here to stay, and concentrations of people are where pandemics break out, then you know, a big city is a terrifying place. And then if civil unrest is basically just something we have to live with now, where is it going to happen? It's going to happen in big cities. So you got this kind of double whammy where it's incredibly expensive and it's all of a sudden really, really dangerous, more dangerous than it used to be. So yeah, maybe you want to leave. And for Wall Streeters, half of them were going to move to Florida when they retired anyhow. So now I think a lot of them think, well, all right, I'll do it at 40 instead of 65, but no real big difference, right? So it's easy for them to envision, yeah. But you know what? I don't think you gain much on the safety or convenience side by going from New York to Miami, because Miami is a pretty stressful place in any circumstances, right? The traffic is the scariest I've ever experienced in Miami, you know, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's got all kinds of other things that are stressful. Like it's in Hurricane Alley. Someday a Cat 5 is going to hit. So I'm not sure what you gain other than no income tax, which, big deal. Know, if you're talking, you know, that's millions of dollars for some of these guys who are moving down there. So that makes it understandable.
Tens of millions, John.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Amazing times. That's why you need to be keeping eye on these trends, especially if you're in the Rust Belt, you're in the Midwest, you're in these established cities, which are in a permanent state of decline, rapidly escalating state of decline. You're looking for outs. You need to be aware of it. Make sure you go over and check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Sign up for his newsletter. Sign up for our newsletter, Financial Survival Network. And we will pick up on Monday, John. And email us, kl@carrylutz.com. We'll keep following these stories because they're important and they're going to be getting bigger and bigger.
All right. See you, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.